largest oil tanker hidden somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. This is Joystick Podcast number 177. This week, Portal 2. Portal to the future. Your emails and companionship. With your host, Chris Grant, Ludwig Kitzman, and Justin McElroy. And now, here is Chris Grant!
Welcome to Joystick Podcast for Friday, April 22nd. I'm your host, Chris Grant.
This is Ludwig Kitzman.
This is your boy, Hoops.
How's it going?
It's going well.
You know what, we can get into this in the games we've been playing, but you know what Justin and I have been doing this week?
Tell me.
I mean, well, you know, I was asking Ludwig if he knew what we were doing this week.
I never know what you're doing. I just don't pay attention.
That's fair. We've in fact been playing Portal 2 co-op bright and early in the morning before work.
Are both of you morning people?
I'm a morning person, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I like the morning.
Okay. I would like to see what happens in that game when you pair someone who is not a morning person with someone like Chris, who whistles when he wakes up.
Chris, like, springs out of bed. It's amazing.
It's disgusting.
You wake up and you're in a great mood. It's nice to be alive.
You know what waking up feels like? It feels like you're being dragged through those flaps on the luggage conveyor, like as the baggage comes out. And you come out into the world through those flaps. That's what it feels like. It's horrible. It's all rubbing.
My wife, she'll do like 7 snoozes. She will hit the snooze.
That's
like
what
7
I do.
Times.
Nope.
And I tell her, just set it for like an hour later. Please.
But that sensation of going back to sleep is so nice.
No. So if I'm up, I'm up. That's a problem. Luckily, I don't have any trouble sleeping. But here's the thing. I was asking Justin about this yesterday. Do you use an alarm clock, Letty, or do you just sort of wake up?
You know what? I rotate alarm clocks because I develop immunities to them to the point where I just will not wake up at all. Like, I won't even wake up to like that most annoying alarm on the iPhone. Oh, here's a funny story. When I was staying with Andrew in New York, Thomas Houston was also staying with him. He was staying upstairs, and I was sleeping on the couch downstairs, and I had my iPhone alarm set for 5 a.m. because I had to catch a flight. And I used that, and you know the sonar ping?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Ding. You know how? So that one was going off for about 15 minutes. Eventually, Thomas had to come down and turn it off. And they're like, he's like, your alarm's going off at 5 a.m. Why aren't you awake? Why aren't you turning it off?
He has a good question. Yeah, I would totally have woken up too. But I was asking Justin, because I don't even use an alarm clock. My body sort of naturally wakes me up between the hours of 7 and 8 o'clock.
It's a mental thing. Like, I don't have trouble waking up when we're like covering Ether or anything like that when we're at shows. But when I'm at home and my brain knows that I don't absolutely have to get up before 1 p.m., then it just doesn't happen.
Well, as captivating as this all is, Chris, how about you play the sound that makes us talk
about
it?
It's a snooze. It was a snooze. I mean, it kind of ties up.
Pretty good. All right, here we go.
All I want to know is what you mean?
God, freed from context, that is the weirdest line. So Chris, we already talked about what we've been playing.
Yeah.
Portal 2. It was a triumph.
Oh,
Christ on their cross.
Oh man, you know what's great about it so far? Here's a spoiler for everybody. There hasn't been any meme-tastic moments yet. There you go.
What do you mean, in the game? Or
the game,
yeah. What do you mean by meme-tastic?
And I'm sitting on one of the dialogue lines, which I thought was so good. I would like to quote it at everyone. But I'm not going to, because I'm a gentleman.
Just you know, one of those goofy things that you can smell the internet nerds circling like vultures. You know, cake is a lie, triumph, etc. Maybe I'm just missing them. But
So, Portal 2 is another Portal game.
Mm-hmm.
It is longer than the last Portal game. I solved
it
in about a day. so it's not very good because I finished it in one sitting. So to not be spoilery at all, what I can say is that you are Shell. You've been in suspended animation for a little while.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah.
Did it bother you that you were playing the same character? Doesn't it feel like it undermines the sort of successful escape? Like that whole thrill of the escape at the end of the first game?
Yep.
Well, they retconned that in, remember? They updated the ending on Steam to include like 2 seconds of video where you're getting pulled back.
Right. It
feels a little like a cheap reset to me. Although I do understand the importance of playing the same character. I just wish they had done it.
I don't know. I just can't see you getting invested in that character. I mean, it's such a cipher. Mm-hmm.
Well, they specifically talk about how they ask people if they wanted to know more about her backstory or her history. And the overwhelming answer was no, nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cares about Shell.
She's just a cipher.
And by the way, I'm trying really hard, guys, not to be...
Well, they make a really good joke about her being a cipher at the beginning of the game, which kind of, sets up their feeling on her, I think.
Mm. They've taken the formula and sort of pushed it forward. The portal gun is still great, and you've still got, it's still as, mind-bendy as ever, playing with portals and momentum and flying around and etc. But they've introduced some new mechanics. There's some gels, 3 different kinds of gels that you use. One is an acceleration gel that makes you run fast. Another is a bouncy gel that you can jump off of. And another is a...
flubber.
Yeah, one is flubber. And another is a white portal conductant that you, when you get it on surfaces, then it lets you attach portals to them. So that is the sort of the mechanical differences. There are also light bridges and
funnels
that teleport you slowly from place to place. That's sort of the mechanical differences. It's also much longer.
So they're really expanding on this idea from the first game, right? That's what we want in a sequel. You want to expand on that.
I guess none of the mechanics they've added. I mean, it's I appreciate them putting in the effort. None of it is sort of as neat as the base mechanic. I mean, if you're wondering if they came up with something as novel as portals, they don't. I mean, it's not really close to that.
Well, these all sort of augment portals, right? They're all portal augmentation devices to parrot their language. Like the tunnels and the or the funnels and the bridges, even the gels, which you can pass around with portals. I know playing the co-op with you, some of these new mechanics really do compound the difficulty and the kind of mental gymnastics that you need to do in order to solve some of the puzzles, right? A normal portal puzzle is pretty difficult. Layer on funnels and layer on light bridges and 4 different portals instead of just 2 different portals and 2 different bodies. And then in addition to that, they have lots of tricky scenarios with the fields that wipe out your portals if you walk through them. And you get these really hugely elaborate puzzles that require just a great amount of mental fortitude. You really have to focus and come up with solutions. There was a couple times when Justin and I were playing where I think one time this morning you said something like, I got an idea. we were stuck for a couple minutes just walking around, shooting portals and vent and stuff. And he's like, I have an idea. It's not a good one, but it's something. Gotta have something. And we did it. And as soon as we started to put it together, it was like, wait a minute, this could actually work if we do that with it, right?
Right.
And that process of deducing the solution is especially in co-op where you're doing it with somebody else, especially with the added difficulty of having multiple portals and all these other augmentations, gets incredibly satisfying. I think you wrote in your review it makes you feel like your brain should be classified by the government as a deadly weapon.
Right. And yeah, that's true. I mean, these puzzles are a lot more... they make them larger. They increase the scale of puzzles without necessarily making them too daunting. There's a couple of times where you look at the puzzle. You ever get that thing? And there are a lot of I think I get this moment in most every puzzle game where I look at the puzzle that's been presented to me and just think, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to do that. Screw that. I'm not doing that.
For sure.
I'm just not interested in it. That thing that compels you to solve it, you know, I'm just not getting my brain engaged in that. And there are a couple moments like that, but they largely do a pretty good job of making it seem approachable, you know, not like a crazy, so daunting that you just are kind of scared off. That doesn't happen.
Well, the amazing thing is that they always ride that line, right? Like, almost, so far in the entire game, single and multiplayer, there haven't been a lot of scenes where I finished a puzzle effortlessly. You know, there's a couple where you're like, okay, well, that was pretty, you know, remedial, and they're working you up towards a more complicated one, you know, sort of just throwing you some bones. But especially in the co-op, you know, I'd say the vast majority of those puzzles, they really walk the line between this puzzle is impossible and I can't solve it ever, and holy crap, how did we do that?
Right.
We're the smartest people ever born.
Yeah, it is. It's really astounding, kind of how they managed to swing that so well.
Have you had a chance to play any of the co-op yet, Luddy?
No, I've only played a few hours of the single player, so I can only comment on that. But, I mean, if you look at this, I don't think going to this game that will ever sort of recapture that feeling of first playing Portal, you know, that sort of completely original idea and that completely new universe and new characters and all that stuff. But it kind of annoys me when I see people being completely dismissive about sequels, especially when they're faced with a sequel that is, you know, exactly the route that you should take. Like, not only is it, you know, expanding on an idea that is worth expanding on, like, I wasn't sick of Portals when I finished Portal 1. I still think it's a good idea. How many other games have there been that kind of have taken this concept further? Not many.
Prey.
Yeah. Well, those weren't, like, self-controlled, though. Those weren't player-controlled.
Yeah. And it came out beforehand, and...
Yeah. It did have a really cool death mechanic, though, which they are sadly removing from Prey 2. But anyway... The neat thing is, like, they're expanding on that stuff. They're you know, doing different puzzles, all that kind of stuff. But they're also building on all the other aspects of the game that people like. Like, the story is much richer. The environments are much more interesting. Like, it's they didn't just put a small team on this game on the side and say, yeah, well, we like this. People like this small little game that we made, so let's do that again. Like, we're going to make it huge now. We're going to add co-op. We're going to do all this stuff. And I like how the character of GLaDOS has changed. Like, she's definitely different in this game, you know, because you killed her. And I like the way that kind of comes through her personality and the way she treats you and the things she says about you. I mean, she never really directly addressed you as often in the first game.
Well, no, I mean, keep in mind, the first game, can we talk about spoilers for Portal 1? We can, right?
Yeah,
it's 2007. So, come on.
The first game... One of the things, and Justin, we had talked about this on the podcast before, and it was kind of the crux of your review, this idea of having a crush on a game. And one of the things that crush developed, like when you get a crush on a lot of people, a lot of times it's not, you know, love at first sight. It sort of develops. And with Portal 1, you know, all 4 or 5 hours of it, you don't realize that GLaDOS is even a character. You know, like, for a long time playing that game, for the first couple hours, she's just a kind of funny voiceover, but she's really just the testing voice. You don't realize that there's anything else going on or that there's even really a narrative. And that was one of the things that really hooked me on Portal, was, like, it was unexpected, you know. Somehow, even though we write it and read about the stuff all day, I think I might have played it just before it came out, so maybe I was able to avoid it in that respect, but that hit me like a sledgehammer, you know, that experience. And it was not what I was expecting. Going into Portal 2, a lot of it is what I'm expecting. You know, it's, and that might be what you're talking about, Justin, with, like, how it's not that crush anymore. You know, it's different. There is a lot of, I mean, in terms of quantity, there's a lot of quantity there. In terms of quality, it's super high quality. But it's not that same kind of diamond in the rough that Portal was, that I think made me, Justin, and most of the rest of the gaming universe kind of so obsessed with it for so long.
I mean, you can't have that again. And I'm glad that they didn't attempt to repeat it. I mean, it's the much smarter decision to not.
I don't know. I guess I'm... I mean, don't get me wrong. For me, a lot of the specialness of the first Portal was a combination of that length where you're just sort of starting to understand what's happening when it ends. And you know, you don't really comprehend the whole experience until the very end of it. And with this, it seems so sort of... Before I start ragging on this too much, know that, like, I think it's great. Like, I think they did a great job. I don't think they needed another Portal game. Like, I don't think there's not a bunch of stuff with the mechanics that they still needed to explore. I mean, they're tacking on other things, but there's nothing terribly revolutionary about that. And the story, I feel like Portal's story and the that whole interaction between you and GLaDOS and that, you know, that great twist after the 19th chamber where you realize you can't keep doing what she's doing because she's trying to kill you. There's nothing that special here. There's nothing, there's no moments like that that are going to sort of endear you to this forever. It's just a very sort of well thought out, well designed, comprehensive expansion of what was happening in the first Portal. But that specialness isn't there. Whatever made that first game so sort of indelible isn't there.
But at the same time, there are a bunch of new characters too that I think are really enjoyable. And they're extremely expressive. Totally. I mean, for a sphere with one eye, Wheatley is pretty darn expressive and well animated.
No, I'm not saying that anything is poorly done.
You're saying that. I'm just, you know, adding to what you're saying. The opening was great. And I think that the opening really showed off that the Source engine isn't, it's still surprisingly good, right? I mean, it's still pretty visually impressive, even though it's aging. The one thing that's disappointed me about the game is the fact that there are loading screens, like, all over the place.
Oh, man, yeah.
I mean, before, I mean, like, this is a problem with Source engine, right? Like, all the Source engine games have these sort of loading points that I don't know if they don't have streaming technology or they haven't added it yet or what, but I mean, this game has full-on loading screens, which I find much more disruptive than, I mean, the previous game, you kind of, it just said loading in the middle of the screen for a few seconds and then you kind of carried on, you know, and I find this a little more disruptive,
and they're frequent, they're like very frequent. Like, constantly.
Right. Loading. And, I mean, this isn't, like, people are blaming this on consoles. I've seen, like, some of the PC threads, but it's a Source engine thing. Like, even Half-Life 2. Remember the stuttering in Half-Life 2? At least that's gone.
Is it just me, or are... is the PC-entitled crowd getting louder lately? Is it just me?
Yeah.
Seems like they're getting louder. I mean, every preview out of our coverage from the Bethesda's BFG event was PC enthusiasts screaming, yelling, Skyrim, oh, they ruined it for consoles. Rage, this got totally ruined.
This is an old PC game, we should say. Like, these are just like, I mean, people who are so invested in their own hardware that they will hate a game before it's come out. They will not want to play it because it doesn't support all the features of their graphics card.
We're boycotting.
I mean, like, you're not in it for the games at that point anymore. I'm sorry. Like, and it's not a company's responsibility to max out your hardware. Like, it's their responsibility to make games for as many people as possible and make it a good game.
I heard that they've been having a lot of marital troubles, those PC. No, I'm just kidding. It's a joke. They're alone. I think they're the worst. The loading times are definitely a disappointment. I think that it does I think that, like I said, if you're going to make a game and call it Portal 2 and put that in the box and stuff, then I think they did as good of a job as they could with it. I just think that we don't, like, if you think about, and I know that I hate it as much as anybody when you start comparing video games to other mediums, but I think that by and large, and of course there are exceptions, but by and large, if you look at the really great sort of landmark achievements in movies and music and books, there's very few, like, great thing too. You know what I mean? Like,
Empire Strikes Back.
Well, okay. Spider-Man 2. Like, Empire Strikes Back, I'm not saying that. Was Spider-Man 2? Really? Like, that's your example? No. Spider-Man 2. You know, Casablanca 2. I'm not saying
Casablanca 2 was so awesome. The time travel element was so good.
American Ninja 2. Definitely.
Yeah, guys, I know that there are exceptions. In the fact that you can fucking go into the annals of time and pull out two movies that were sequels to great movies does not prove your point. God damn, the internet. You got me on fire today already.
Ben Hur 2 was
big. I'm going to cut your throats. Jesus.
Spartacus 2.
Wayne World 2 is the only good example. But a lot of times because they said the things that they needed to say, they did what they needed to do. And I feel like Portal is one of the first examples we had of that where it didn't overstay its welcome. It did what it was going to do. And it came and went, you know, and I think that that's rare and it's special and it kind of ruined it. But I mean, not in a bad way. It's just in a way that it's kind of a shame that we live in a world where Portal 2 needs to exist.
That said, how much money would you spend out of your wallet for more co-op maps?
All?
If they were like, hey, we're going to start making co-op maps. We're going to sell them to you for dollars, but we're going to charge you X amount. I'm thinking they could sell us like one of these. I think there's five. We did four of them. Five total co-op, missions or series.
Yeah, I guess.
$10 for one of those? Would you pay it? Probably pay it.
Yeah, probably, yeah. $10 for one would be a stretch.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm hoping they did sort of like what they did with Left 4 Dead 2 and made it more able to be bolted onto, you know, whatever they need to do in the back end to make content easier to release for it. I hope they do that with Portal 2.
Well, I mean, you're probably only going to pay for it on 360.
Yeah,
it's true.
Probably true. Kind of heartbreaking, but you guys been playing anything else this week besides Portal?
I played a little bit more of Dragon Age 2, but my
You're not going to finish that joint, are you?
My progress in that game has slowed down to a trickle all of a sudden.
You need to finish it, Chris.
I know, it's just not having a great time with it, and I got sick, and then I was on a mini vacation, and then Portal came out, and
excuses.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there's nothing else to talk about for the present, hell, go! Thank God.
Yeah, I played Magic Clash of Heroes HD.
Oh yeah.
What a great, well designed game. I love it. It's awesome. If you're not aware of how it works, it's basically. It's sort of like Puzzle Quest in the sense that it's a blend of puzzle game elements and RPG elements. Basically, you're doing one-on-one battles. You have a health bar at the very bottom of your screen, and the enemy has a health bar at the top of the screen. So, what you're trying to do is maneuver your troops. You have different kind of troops, different kind of colors. So, if you line up three, if you make a column of three enemies or three units, that sends off an attack into the enemy's health bar. And depending on, or you can make three in a row and it'll make a wall to protect you from incoming attacks, stuff like that. So you're constantly readjusting the positions of your units, and you're trying to plan a few turns ahead because every attack takes a few turns to charge up. So the little countdown timers on it. So if you see, say an enemy create a really strong attack that has about four turns to go, you can quickly construct an elite unit on your side that'll take three turns to fire off and sort of stutter that attack, that kind of thing. So you're constantly sort of thinking a few turns ahead, and it's kind of like very strategic, but it has a really sort of friendly presentation and really great music, and it's easy to get into it. Like if you get lost on puzzle games that kind of have too dry a presentation, I think wrapping it in sort of this admittedly generic RPG story is kind of a real good way to sell it. And it's just really well thought out. Like, you'll see as you get more units, the game kind of gradually gives you access to more units and teaches you how to use them, and you build up your strategies, and eventually the battles get a little longer and longer and you know, tougher. And this has got a really fun difficulty curve, and every time you finish a puzzle battle and you get the XP, It doesn't feel like the XP or the loot is the rewarding part. It's actually playing that puzzle and solving it and sort of, you know, winning and using strategy. That's what's fun about it. So it doesn't feel like this loot-driven dungeon crawler, which is not something I tend to enjoy. So definitely look into it if something like Diablo doesn't work for you. And yeah, I would recommend it for the price point, certainly. It's $15. Looks great. And it looks like it's going to, I don't know, it would probably take you 30 hours to finish if you're, you know, stuck on time.
How much is it for on Xbox again?
It's $15.
It's not bad.
It's a really fun puzzle game. And it's like whenever you finish a round, you'll want to do another one. It's one of those just one more round games. I highly recommend it. And it's by Cappy, so you know the art style is awesome.
Which reminds me, Lily, did you play any Sword and Sorcery?
No, I just downloaded it. I haven't had time to play it.
Okay. We'll play it and tell me about it next week.
I will.
Shall we, you got anything else, Justin?
No, I played some iPhone 4 games. I got the iPhone 4 now.
Oh, hey.
Wow.
Yeah,
cutting edge guy over there.
I know, I've taken it to the limit. Man, it looks good.
Well, you were still rocking that 3G, right?
I was on that 3GS tip.
Oh, okay.
And I fell down the stairs and I dropped my phone. So I had to get a new phone. Happens.
Ruh-roh.
I retired from Tiny Wings. I don't know if I told you guys.
I saw the Twitter hubbub.
Yeah.
I've been playing that. It's really fun. Can you give me some tips, actually? Give me some tips.
You give me some tips. If you don't always want to just... when you get a big jump and go really fast, you don't always want to just let yourself fly. You want to tap when you hit the arc of your jump and get control of yourself again. Because otherwise, it'll be random whether or not you come down in a valley. So okay. If you tap just at the peak of your jump, then you'll be in control again. Otherwise, you'll lose control. So there's a pro tip for you. A lot of times when you come off of an island jump, you want to start tapping the screen once you've reached the other island to be able to get that big jump off of it. So, and also don't try to get a high score until you're at Nest 28 because you won't be able to hang.
Just can't stop.
If that's all we've got for the present,
yeah,
I think we should take a look into the future.
Portal to the future!
It's our new feature, Porthole to the Future.
Not to be confused with Portal 2, : the future.
We're on a boat because we're taking a boat through the end of April.
We're taking a time boat.
Time boat through the end of April. We're looking out the porthole and we can see May there in the distance. So we're looking through the porthole to the future.
Makes complete sense. This is really well thought out, actually.
Yeah, we really didn't just come up with this right before the show. So let me use my sleeve here and wipe away some of the steam that's gathered on the porthole so Ludwig can stand on this orange crate that I procured for him and look out there into the distance and see what is to come.
All right, so I'm looking into May, and I see Brink.
I'm not sure that that's going to be very popular.
You're worried that Brink? It's not going to have a huge community.
I don't know what success looks like for Brink. I will probably play Brink, but I just I can't think of I don't know. It just seems so unlikely that someone's going to be able to dethrone.
So that's coming out on May 10th. We have a preview up quite recent. I think it went up this week. Chris, you read that quite a lot, I think. So maybe you can tell us a little bit. What's interesting about Brink?
It comes out May 10th, I think. It's developed by the guys at Splash Damage in London, being published by Bethesda. Splash Damage is most known for... developing the Enemy Territory games, Wolfenstein Enemy Territory and Enemy Territory Quake Wars. It's worth also pointing out that they did not do the console ports of Quake Wars. So if you tried those, then they were completely terrible.
Don't blame them.
They would probably apologize. Those were handled internally at Activision. So, class-based team shooter, pretty, you know, run-of-the-mill. It's got a lot in common with the Enemy Territory games, unsurprisingly. A lot in common with Team Fortress 2, also unsurprisingly. Has a kind of neat art style, very kind of realistic, but also cartoony. This side of Team Fortress 2, Team Fortress 2's cartoony looks.
Basically, everyone has like really elongated limbs and
big long faces.
Yeah,
but it also looks like very realistic. Like it's very like the texture is very hyper detailed. It's very bright.
It has parkour elements, right? Like you kind of point the camera where you want to go, and he'll automatically climb over things. And
yeah, you sort of just have an action button. You run, and he'll clamber, or he'll slide under, or kind of grapple. Objects, I say he because you can only be dudes in this game. Some kind of weird future where I guess they don't have to procreate.
Women aren't violent.
It's true. So it's got some neat elements. Like you can, most interestingly, you can change your class at any time. So if you have a bunch of, the example Jonathan used in his preview is if you have a bunch of medics that are all at the objective trying to do something and you realize that they need some cover, and you're a medic, you could switch over to soldier right there. Boom.
Who would shoot at a medic, though?
I know. Well, it violates all sorts of conventions, but they do it. So you've got that. You've got an objective wheel. So it's got some streamlining, you know, I guess in an effort to make it more accessible, make it a little more console-friendly. And by all accounts, it's a really solid shooter. We've had three previews by three different people, and they've all really enjoyed their time. The big question is it going to find an audience, which is pretty important for a game like that. We'll see. One of the other things about it is that it blends a multiplayer and single player. So you have one character, it's drop-in. So if you do single player, it's kind of the same as multiplayer. You could use AI or humans. You could limit it to only some AI, some humans. And you keep your experience points across both modes, which is...
That seems smart, because like Brink had its system split. Like you had a multiplayer career running in parallel to the single player. Did I say Brink? I meant Blur.
Blur, yeah.
And so whenever you played single player and you got XP and you advanced there, it kind of felt like you could have just been doing races in multiplayer, and you know that's kind of where it counts. Like nobody cares what your level is in single player. So it seems really smart to combine those two.
Yeah.
What else we got, Luddy?
Well, do we need to do more than one game? Because I only have this. The next one is a week after that, and we'll run out of these before we're out of April. What do you think?
Oh, you only wanted to do one. You wanted to do weekly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, perfect. Well, then I think we're done with the Portal to the Future. I think it went surprisingly well.
I'm gonna give it about a 7, but I think next week we'll be saying it was so good there didn't really need to be another one.
Ooh, interesting. So there's a sneak preview. Let's that's the future. Let's talk about right now, or the very recent past.
Joysticks, news on the march. The news of tomorrow, today.
Today.
So I was reading Metacritic the other day, and
they have really fascinating articles on there. I've written a few.
Yeah. I decided while I was there that I would do some user reviews from some games I've purchased, or maybe not even purchased recently, just games I had opinions
really
on
thoughtful
that I wanted
of you.
To write reviews. Right. I like to make sure that my voice is heard.
I just did a few for Crysis 2, actually.
Really?
I gave it 0 because it doesn't use DirectX 11. Now that I have my personal computer, I can just, like, I can't even bear to look at the game. Game sucks.
It must be so ugly. It must be the ugliest game. I was surprised to see that Portal 2 had a 5, because I gave it a 0.
That's weird.
Yeah. Mostly because they did this ARG thing, and they said they were going to release the game early, and it wasn't early enough for my liking.
No,
because
actually, I believe you misread. Valve actually sent out a press release saying that they were going to give everyone the world Portal 2 for free a year before it came out.
Yeah, and it, to see them not follow through on that was
outrageous.
Just,
someone should take them to court over that.
The fact of the matter is, it was a really great promotion. I mean, what else do you want from a promotion? It was like funny and interesting, and a lot of work went into it. And I think I can't imagine who would be unsatisfied by that. Like, I don't know why
grumps. Grumps?
Like, what was bad? Like, what was the fact that you put a bunch of money? Like, you didn't pay a cent for it.
I think here, about on Friday, before when that countdown was just about to finish, I think people at that point had the expectation that that countdown would end and the game would come out. Like, I think people had that sort of, whether it's the message getting diluted on the internet and just getting twisted or something like that. But, I mean, that message clearly said there was going to be one more test, and obviously that was the computation thing where people had to play 13 indie games to help Portal 2 unlock sooner. And they were actually pretty smart about it. I don't know if you noticed the potato counter that they had. Mm-hmm. Those were like potato, because it was sold in the potato bag, is it? The potato bag?
Potato sack.
Potato sack sale. Right, so if you found specific achievements in those games, they would add to that potato counter. So as soon as it looked like the game wasn't going to unlock before it was actually supposed to come out, they activated that counter. And that also sort of added to the sort of the computation that they needed to,
it's like a multiplier.
To reboot BIOS. I think they may have underestimated how long it would take to complete all those games, the cycles for all those games, maybe. But I mean, the game still came out earlier, and I think people had fun playing those games. I mean, they were all pretty good games.
Right. I think Valve's only problem there is that they probably didn't do a great job of letting people know. Like, maybe if there was a counter that said, like, based on current projections, if we maintain this speed, game will be unlocked this early or this early or this early. Like,
didn't I have that?
Not really. I mean, oh, they had the hours, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it wasn't like a day. But I mean, like, let's be honest. There should have been a dude who, I mean, they should have had some idea when they wanted it to unlock. And there should have
somebody been doing the math to match that, you know, like.
Right, yeah, there should have been a guy who's like, yeah, let's just speed that up a little bit. You know, I
can see why people were disappointed, but, like, taking to Metacritic to review the game and say it was bad because of that. They also said it was bad because they left in a piece of text that said, now saving, do not turn off your console. And it should have said, do not turn
more
off your computer.
More proof of the game being dumbed down for the console generation.
Right. And I mean, like, the and, you know, people complained about, I saw someone in the chat room just a second ago saying that the information was communicated poorly. Like, it's an ARG. Like, that's the kind of the bit. Like,
well, let's face it, they wouldn't have won this anyway. Like, let's say it released on Sunday. You know who's mad now? The people who have to buy it on Tuesday on console.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it was fun marketing. I mean, it wasn't obnoxious. It was clever. It was really in tune with their audience. And it you know, tapped into Steam. Like, it used the stuff that they have right there, and it helped all those indie games too get exposure. So it seems really fair.
This is their first major release. Left 4 Dead 2. I guess Left 4 Dead 2 is maybe the first major release since the Orange Box that they've done when they've had the full weight of Steam to exploit for their, you know, their own IP. They also, if you unlocked enough, I guess, potatoes, there was, like, unlockable potatoes that they added into some of these games, you got a free copy of the entire Valve collection, like every Valve game ever. So,
wow.
That's about 3 games made over the last 40 years. It's pretty good.
So I changed my rating from a 0 to a 1 out of 10. I thought that was fair.
Well, I think that's more than fair. I think you might have been being a little too generous, honestly.
Here's another really awesome thing that's 100% true.
Tell me.
Rumor. Wii 2, codenamed Project Cafe. Controller includes built-in touchscreen.
I heard it has a mind-reading beret.
Whoa.
And you control everything with an electronic baguette.
I'll baguetting that for Christmas.
Project Cafe is such a stupid name for a console, by the way. I know it's just the project name, but come on.
Yeah, it's, like, I it can't, is if
you Revolution!
Yeah, I mean, it's like they've not had great success with this in the past. Like, this
Dolphin,
the cuff poetry there on the stage, right?
Ultra 64. Wow, these are bad, aren't they? Wow, that's really
Project
terrible.
Nitro.
We've got all of them back to what was Super Nintendo's?
I don't know.
We've got Ultra 64, Project Dolphin, Revolution, and now Project Cafe.
I like dolphins, though. Those are cool.
I'm gonna see if I can find the code name for.
Project Cafe is, this is being reported by French news site 01net. They had the hardware specs.
They might have translated. It's just Project Shop or Project...
The code name for the N64 was actually originally Project Reality.
Reality, wow. How
in which
fitting.
You are constantly trapped in a mire of fog.
Mode 7 was like the most realistic thing ever. French News at 01net, they got the hardware specs of NGP before its unveiling, so they sort of have a little bit of cred here to ride on. And they're throwing it all against the wall for Project Cafe. They claim that it has hardware that resembles the Xbox 360, such as a 3-core IBM PowerPC CPU. The stranger part, and CVG had something about this also. I think IGN at some point even had a rumor about this. and then Kotaku published something today where they're saying the same basic thing, which is that the peripheral will feature a 6-inch single input touchscreen, and this would be for like a controller, which if you don't know how big a 6-inch touchscreen is, the DSi XL is like 4.3 inches, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The NGP is massive. It's 5 inches. The Kindle, I think, is 6 inches. So this thing is going to be like the same screen size as a Kindle.
Right, so, and it has what? It's supposed to have 8 buttons on it as well, like 2 analog sticks?
8 buttons?
Like, what is going on?
Because that sounds like Nintendo.
Is that for the controller now?
That's just this the controller. This is the controller, yeah.
Not it's the like console. A gigantic VMU in your controller.
Right.
Realism shouldn't get in the way of any of this. They have... Do you know how much money they have? They have, like, all the money. Like, they can do whatever they want to. I would believe any crazy shit that they say at this point.
Also, these screens are 3D.
It's a 6-inch single-input touchscreen, according to the rumor, which, again... 2011 guys like multi-touch. Let's get on it.
So that sounds pretty realistic, though. That sounds spot on.
Yes, that sounds dead on.
When you put touchscreen in Chris Grant's controllers, he wants them to be multi-touch input. Like what year is
and,
it?
And he doesn't want them to be. He wants them to be capacitive.
Yeah, come on.
You can do it.
Fingers. He has grubby fingers.
Come on.
Yeah, I want them to be capacitive. That's all. Come on!
I don't think it's asking so much.
It's not. You know what? I was at the grocery store the other day, and they upgraded their point-of-sale system for the self-checkout, and it had a capacitive touchscreen, for crying out loud.
It was 3D. I bet it wasn't.
It was 3D.
Chris went to the manager and said, "Excuse me, do you have a moment to test your screen here on your kiosks? I was curious if they're using capacitive or conductive technology, and what are the multi-touch specs on this, this little humdinger? If you just, I shouldn't need more than 2 to 3 hours to test your kiosk touch screen. What is it? What is your name here? Dylan? Dylan? Is this what it? Well, Dylan, tell me about these screens here, buddy."
The worst. Just the worst person, I think.
He was the worst person. He didn't have a lot of information before we had to leave. I wrote the regional manager.
I gotta go stock the celery and stuff. So if you could, they're just screens, I guess. Like you just, if you want to buy something, or your credit card or whatever, cabbage,
I can help you with that.
So
it's like push button, I guess.
Back to the.
I need to go. Can you leave, please?
Back to the rumor. 6-inch single input touchscreen on the controller featuring, I guess 8 buttons was the other rumor. A front mounted camera can even function as a Wii sensor bar. In other words, this all sounds like Hui. I mean, it sounds like absolute Hui.
This sounds like maybe it's a giant U-draw.
It's like a giant U-draw, yeah.
Don't you wish that you could go back to yourself the day you first heard, like, what the Wii would be? And just, like, capture whatever you were feeling then. Because I think that that would be a very valuable sort of reaction. Like, how crazy did that sound originally? Like, because I think if I could put that in some sort of context, my reaction has been sort of dulled over time, you know, and of course, Nintendo's crazy success. But
this just sounds, A, weird, B, expensive. If a Kindle, which uses e-ink, you know, the screen's relatively cheap to produce... And even a subsidized Kindle that Amazon sells you is still like $125. So I just don't understand how they're going to sell controllers with a 6-inch screen that's anything short of a VMU style screen, like a like an LED clock.
Right.
It's going to be so exciting when you get to check your health in Resident Evil again on the screen without pausing the game.
It's seriously going to be a giant, you know, 30 by 30 pixel Tamagotchi-style display. And you're just going to be able to look down and see like a really crude rendering of whatever is going on. But it'll be six inches.
It'll be like a giant VMU.
It'll be a huge VMU. Oh, look, I got to make sure I feed my Pokemon. I'm going to bring it with me.
Yeah, it's sort of fanning these flames here. We saw the Wii price drop. This is sort of rumored for a little bit, and then it officially went into place, I guess, this weekend. I was in Chicago. I didn't hear about it, but the Wii dropped to 170 bones in retailers everywhere. So,
you know what we call that?
Tell me.
We call it a humble brag.
A humble brag.
I didn't see it this weekend. I was in Chicago.
You know, I don't buy my consoles. I only buy my consoles at Shaman, and he doesn't accept any bones. Just kind of odd. Like, he only has his credit card. You're lucky.
So, yeah, I mean, I think definitely...
Are you ready to buy a new console?
I'll tell you why I'm not ready to buy a new console. I still feel like I haven't gotten my money's worth out of my Wii. I'm still, like, waiting for... I'm hoping this new Zelda is going to be good. I'm looking forward to
that. That's never stopped you before.
I'm just...
You know you'll still buy it, right? Do we have to have this bet again?
You know what might happen is the new Zelda is going to come out on both systems, except it's going to be really delayed.
Yes. Already. It's going to be delayed.
And it's going to be it's going to be flipped on the new system. Link will be right-handed or left-handed or whichever the one he usually isn't.
He'll be right-handed again, I guess? I don't remember.
Don't admit that you know that.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they've got a lot to prove, Nintendo, that is. We'll see.
I don't know. Like, if they come out with... Your graphics need to be good enough that I can get excited about your thing without having to pretend that I'm at retro night at my local bar and grill.
I think what they'll be looking at is it'll be like the way the Xbox One was to the PS2. Like, this new system will be to the Xbox 360 and PS3 as the Xbox One was. So it'll be better. It'll be the games will, you know, the best versions will be on that system, but like the graphical jump is not going to be generational. Or it'll be kind of like the Dreamcast and PS2.
Right.
I don't think that, yeah, I think that...
It's an awkward place to bring out a new system, like a generational jump. It's kind of odd, an odd space.
It's kind of an interesting tack though, right? Because what they're doing is they're taking advantage of the fact that this console generation is going on for so long, mm-hmm. and they're basically introducing sort of a stopgap generation. I mean, they can afford to bring out another console when other people can't, so they're going to ride the crest of like great late life.
Sure, but I mean, depending on what kind of hardware we're looking at, I mean, what they can do is they'll be able to. I mean, if it'll be backwards compatible with Wii, probably, right? So they'll be able to keep that.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, so the problem that they ran into with the Wii is that the games had to be completely different. Like, you couldn't, like, someone couldn't make a multi-platform game for PC, Xbox, and PS3 and then have exactly the same thing on Wii. The technology wouldn't allow it, the control wouldn't allow it. So now they'll be able to get in on these huge install bases that are, you know, developers who are making games for Xbox and PS3 will be able to easily develop a game for this system, and it won't cost them everything. You know, like, it's not like developing a game for a system that has no install base. So in a way, releasing now is kind of like leeching off the install bases of the other systems in order to provide financial security to the developers. But what's to prevent Microsoft and PS and Sony from doing the same thing? Why not release an Xbox 360 Plus or whatever that runs all the Xbox 360 games plus, you know, enhanced versions of games or whatever? So, I mean, I don't know. It could work or it could backfire.
We'll find out. It's going to be an exciting E3, that's for sure. It seems like, regardless of how accurate a lot of the details of the rumor are, it seems pretty clear that
what they need to get is Battlefield 3, because that's the game that I'm seeing now that I don't think will look very good on consoles. You know what I mean? Because it's like that technology is way out there.
If Nintendo had Battlefield 3 and it was looking like it does anywhere close to on the videos, that would blow people's faces open.
Blow their nards clean off.
They would have no nards left. Nardless.
Jerry, where are your nards?
Project Nard Blow Away.
I'm taking a shower. What are you doing in my bathroom? Number two, Menards got blown away. okay, so let's go to our next segment. We've got a lot of emails every week.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we get voicemails. Every once in a while, we'll get emails that are so good, so rich, and so deserving that we recognize we can't do them justice ourselves. So we have a segment that we like to call Professional Voice Actor Bob Ball Reads Your Emails. And we've got one right here.
Hello, dear. How are you today? I hope you are fine. I am Precious by name, and I come across your email address, so I fell like knowing you. Do you think age, color, or distance stand as a barrier to our friendship? If not, please stretch out your hands to me by writing me back, so I will give you my pictures and more about me. Thanks, big kisses and hug-ugs. Yours, Miss Precious. Miss Precious, of course age, color, and distance are not barriers for me. I mean, I know people who traveled to PAX East and dressed up in a big green dinosaur costume and danced around for 2 hours. I don't discriminate. Or have shame. Unfortunately, I don't have hands to stretch out to you. These are merely elaborate covers for my pirate hooks I had installed when I heard about the Pirates of the Caribbean RPG. Imagine my surprise when they canceled it. Oh, well. At least I can open mail faster, right? Big hug-ugs.
She just wants somebody to stretch out to her.
I'll stretch out to her.
I wish someone would give me a hug-ug. It's like a hugging off.
Like Bob-ombs, but...
like Bob-ombs.
Hug-ugs.
More. I want to hear more people talking.
Huh. Okay. Well, I guess we could go ahead and do this.
Do it live! Do it live! And thing sucks. Do it live. I don't know what that means. Do it live.
So the do it line. I know you think he's saying do it live in that bit, but he's not. Listen again. He was that was originally a promo for Joystick that our friend Bill O'Reilly put together. 1-877-JOY-STIQ. It's a phone number. You call it on your phone. You listen to a humorous but terse voicemail message, and then you leave us a terse voicemail message. That's the quid pro quo. This first one comes from Michigan. I'm not sure where on the hand it is, but I don't know.
Hello, hi guys, it's me, Sonic, the Hedgehog from Green Hill Zone. Just wanted to know if you remember my birthday today. I'm 20 years old. I can drink in Canada. Anyway, thanks guys. Bye.
You know, I have to say, Mickey Mouse is a terrible Sonic impersonation.
Oh, my.
Didn't sound like Jaleel White at all. Okie doke. Let's switch over to a new voicemail. This one, conveniently enough, is also about Sonic. I figure we'll try and keep these all together in one.
Hey, Joystick, it's Jackson from Texas. Any news on that Sonic the Hedgehog Episode 4 Part 2? Or wait, no. Sonic the Hedgehog 4 Episode 2. Or is this a Half-Life situation? All right, bye.
I've frequently compared the Sonic series to Half-Life. I think they're sure.
The same thing. I actually asked a PR guy who normally talks to about Sega stuff. And he said there's nothing he could say on the record about it. So sorry, I'm not more helpful, but we are asking about it.
Yeah.
My gut says it's canceled. I don't think Sonic 4 sold very well.
They got like 8 more episodes.
Yeah, but this next Sonic, you watch out.
The next one will be better. The next one will be good.
Speaking of good sequels, here is another voicemail from Illinois.
Hey guys, this is Lewis, right outside of Chicago, in Cicero, Illinois. Anyway, I just wanted to ask, me and my friend, we were planning on going halvesies on Portal 2, mainly because he has the PS3 and I own a PC. And also we heard a PC version comes free with the PS3 version. Thing is, we don't know if we need the same Steam account for both versions. So, do you think I should go ahead with this halvesies deal? Or not a good idea. Anyway, I'll take my call off the air. Thanks, guys.
I just want to do a quick Google voice transcription readout, because this one was pretty good. He wanted to know if they needed the same Steam accounts for both versions. What Google Voice heard was, do we need the same Steve accounts for both virgins? It's pretty good. My virgin better not
Steve's
have a Steve account.
Steve's account is overdrawn.
So we did a test on this when we got it on PS3, and I'm pretty sure that you need to tie it to your own Steam account. It will actually, it's a two-part system. You verify kind of validate your PSN ID with your Steam account, and then you go on your Steam account and claim the code.
But, I mean, couldn't he just do that with his friend's Steam account? Like, the other guy could still keep playing Portal.
Right, it just means that he would have his PSN ID paired with some other guy's Steam ID.
Right. What about making a new PSN ID just for that game?
You could do that if you want to. Yeah, I mean, you could.
Or making a Steam account just for that game. I mean, just making up a new Steam account, paying with a new PSN ID, and just splitting it like that. I mean, you'll only have that one game on that account. But, I mean, you can still share it that way.
Yeah, I mean, those are all options. It comes down to how seamless you want it to be.
I'm going to go ahead and say, as long as we're voting here, I'm going to say just get a fucking part-time job. Because this sounds like a lot of work here. Just get a job.
I'm going to say maybe wait, like, a month, and then Valve will have it on sale on Steam for 8 cents. Because that seems to be kind of what they do, how they roll. 8 cents is a good deal for Portal 2.
It's a pretty good deal. I say it's worth it, right?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's worth it. So
it would have gotten 5 stars if it launched at 8 cents.
That's it for that. What do you guys think about just going ahead doing some plain old emails where we don't hear any voices? We'll hear Luddy's voice, but that's it.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
And now it's time for listener email with Ludwig Kietzmann on the Joystick
Podcast. Yeehaw!
All right. So, Luddy, this is our email section. You email us at podcast@joystick.com. Luddy reads your emails to us.
You guys did a great job this week, by the way. Your emails were much better and shorter. Still had some that were just sort of ramblings, I guess, but by and large, nice work.
About how many emails did we get, Justin, in total?
30.
We've kept 4, so you got 4 out of 30, guys. That's pretty good. Pretty good score.
Yep. Not bad at all.
All right, break us off this first one from Matt.
So, the first guy is Matt. He writes, with the release of Mortal Kombat, I'm getting my yearly hankering to get into a fighting game. Thing is, I'm terrible at them. What is a good fighting game for a fighting game noob? I would say Mortal Kombat.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like I really wish it was easier to get into those things, because I don't know. I think I could probably get a get into my. It always seemed like a situation where there's no real substitute for practice.
I will say it's, a lot of the reviews I've read for Mortal Kombat agree that it is a really great fighting game for a single player, that you don't need.
It has a lot of content, a lot of modes. It has a couple of really good tutorials. There's modes that teach you all the fatalities.
Training modes,
I read about this in my preview from was it GDC, I think, or maybe it was PAX. I think it was GDC. And the game is really good at sort of just being really well-rounded and lots of content and stuff. So as soon as you run into a brick wall somewhere, it'll be really easy for you to just go to a different mode or something. But I think this game has an advantage in the sense that you've probably played Mortal Kombat before. You kind of are somewhat versed in its rhythm, so to speak. And you probably have that little bit of nostalgia built into your brain at this point. So you'll probably get, like, you know how to do a leg sweep, right? Like, sweep the leg and do an uppercut. That kind of thing. It definitely doesn't strike me as a super hardcore fighting game. I'm sure people will exist online that will destroy you within seconds, but for a game that you'll play with a bunch of friends and stuff, I think Mortal Kombat is definitely the one. Certainly more than even Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is not difficult to get into, but you do have to make sense of that visual chaos, which I don't think Mortal Kombat has an issue with. Mortal Kombat is much slower and very clean, despite all the blood and gore.
All right, then.
My question has been answered. We answered it to death.
Answered the shit out of it.
Nick writes, "Hi, Joystick. With the 3DS out now, how do you think its presence will affect sales of DS games? A friend asked me the other day when I figured the 3DS would cause DS games to be phased out. Given the similarity of their core functionalities, it never occurred to me that the 3DS was indeed the next generation."
That's a good question. I don't think, and it's so hard to tell, but it does not feel to me like the 3DS is catching, especially the way that the DS and DSi did. I mean, I don't know, the sales numbers have been so restricted, it's hard to tell, but just looking at, like, you know, sort of general buzz and stuff, I don't know, I'm not sure it's really catching fire in the way it would need to sort of, you know,
kill the DS. Does it feel like maybe it's exactly, like the DS to the DSi, in the sense that people will upgrade the models and get access to exclusive games, but I mean, you'll still have the DS.
I mean, does it need to kill the 3DS? Kill it. I mean, does it
needs to
does it
murder it?
Does it? I mean, it plays its games, right? So it doesn't necessarily need.
I don't think it's a coincidence that it plays the same games, that it has DS in the title,
provided it plays the same games poorly.
Yeah, right. It doesn't look very good, but
consumers are that savvy and are totally cognizant of that reality. I mean, I think that there's a lot of games and a lot of consumers that will continue to buy DS games and play them on their 3DS for a long time. I think for a lot of games, that's probably a perfectly fine solution. And that they're not.
I was still buying Game Boy games, like, way into the DS's lifespan.
Yeah, I still every once in a while drop a. Even though I have the DS version, I for some reason like the Japanese version better of Rhythm Heaven, which I kept in my Game Boy Advance slot of my DS forever.
And when was the GBA slot phased out? That was the DSi, right?
As of DSi. The DSi. Yeah, it's still in the DS Lite. Okay. Your carts stick out a little bit, but they still work.
I wish they would still sell GBA SPs. I love that system.
That was a great system. We were trying to find
a GBA Micro.
Griff was looking for GBA Micros actually this weekend. It's some of his, you know, they have some really great old game stores up there, and apparently the adapters are really weird and specific, and they're tough to find.
Oh, like you couldn't use the SP adapter on the Micro.
Right. So when they get them in, they very rarely have the adapter with them.
SP was great though. That clamshell design, still glossy.
I got the NES one. Still have it.
Nice.
Next email.
Kyle writes, "Hey guys, here's my question for all of you." We could probably cut that part out. Do you use achievements?
Always the editor.
Do you use achievements as a guideline for how much of a game you've completed? As in, if you get all the achievements in a game, do you feel that is a good basis to go off, to know you've seen and done all that you could? Is this a good thing, or does it cause linear thinking for players? It's an interesting question. I always go rifling through the achievements when I finished a game and I feel like playing it more, and then I look for, like, challenges. This happened to me with Split Second. Like, I kind of ran out of things to do in the career mode, and there were, like, other challenges inside the achievements. That's when I kind of look at it as a view of completion. But otherwise, I would say no.
Depends on the kind of game. A lot of times, I'll do a cursory glance so that if I'm only going to play through it once, I can grab things on my way. Like, yesterday, 2 days ago, we were playing Portal 2, Justin and I. And I saw in the achievements listing that there was an achievement for... Sometimes some achievements are bad, where they basically spoil stuff if you read the achievements, so...
Yeah, Portal, I wouldn't recommend reading them until you played through it. Even though they're kind of hinty, it's like... I don't know. It's probably more than you want
to know. Really? Because I don't know. They all seem like super vague, except for the co-op ones, which seem really straightforward.
Maybe they only seem vague in retrospect.
Right. I don't know. The co-op ones are things like, you know, win 3 rounds of rock, paper, scissors in co-op. So, like, we tried doing that. You get, like, an achievement for it. And it was fun to, you know, figure out. I wish you could actually play rock, paper, scissors. It's all randomized, but...
Well, that isn't that... I mean, in theory, shouldn't that be rock, paper, scissors?
More or less, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how realistic of a simulation do you need here?
I'm actually really talented at rock, paper, scissors. Really skilled. World champion. I would definitely say it can be bad, though. It can lead to linear thinking for players where, you know, it's like your people renting the Avatar game just to grind it for some chivos.
Yeah. Although I have noticed recently that you usually do get at least, I mean, you get close to getting at least half of the achievements or trophies when you play a game on hard. That usually helps.
Mm-hmm. I know some games are bad. Like I played Lords of Shadow. And the first playthrough of that, and I did tons of stuff, and it's like a 25-hour game. It took me forever. I got like 200 achievements. It was very stingy.
They've got
like
a ton of stuff tied to all the challenges and yeah. difficulty modes and stuff. The worst one that I've ever played was Blue Dragon.
Right, right.
Which I played. I enjoyed it. I mean, I played for 65 hours. I mean, it's as classic an RPG as you get. And I don't mean classic in terms of quality, as in like they made an old-school RPG with really detailed 3D graphics. And an awful cost. But I finished that game 65 hours and I got 25 points out of 1,000. I mean, if I was really attached on achievements, I'm sure I'd be furious. But I mean, that's pretty bad.
That was a first party game too, right? It was published by Microsoft, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you were looking at achievements as completion for that game and you spent 65 hours and you only got 25 points, the game's not that big. It's really not.
One more email, last one.
I will let this in from Danny. He writes, "This kid in my programming class loves bad video games. He loved Fable 3. He thought Fallout New Vegas was wonderful. And he won't stop talking about how incredible Dragon Age 2, also known as Dragon Age Kirkwall, is. And I think he even mentioned wanting to buy Homefront. How do I knock some sense into this fool? Also, he does like me too much, mostly because I have a Mac and not a PC." Oh, he doesn't like me too much because I have a Mac and not a PC. Yeah, I know. I don't get it either. Well, I mean,
because you only have one mouse button. How about that? Ugh.
If you want to knock some sense into him, just wait until he's alone and just like, you know, beat the crap out of him.
Him with a
fracture
bat.
His skull.
So let's go through your
don't
list.
Actually do that. Don't do that.
He doesn't love bad video games, right? Fable 3 for all of
that
its...
seems objective, doesn't it? Though, like, I mean, there are games that he likes that you do not like. That's
right.
A better way
Fable 3 for all of its problems. I don't think it's bad.
No,
I just don't think
bad.
It's. See,
it's
I
really
disagree.
Bad.
I think you could play Fable 3 and not know that it's kind of whack.
Maybe someone has already beaten sense into him, but like the effects have been negative, and he's
yeah.
no longer able to distinguish the poor qualities in these video games.
Fallout New Vegas, I haven't played it, but it got good reviews. I mean, everyone unanimously agreed that it was a technical disaster. But it was like a really competent RPG.
But if it was like Fallout 3, it was probably bad, right?
And a good sequel to Fallout 3. If you liked Fallout 3, I'm sure he probably really liked Fallout New Vegas. Dragon Age 2, yeah,
not
it's kind of
incredible, though.
It's kind of a mess in some ways, but it's got a lot of quality in there in places. Homefront, I don't know what to say about that. That one, I'm just gonna.
Yeah, that one's just...
That's left field. Yeah, if you're going to play a shooter, like, there's so many better shooters. Like, there's just not enough time. Play Medal of Honor. Play the Medal of Honor that came out last year. That's a better shooter than Homefront.
Play Bulletstorm, man.
Bulletstorm.
Play Crysis.
You've got a Mac, though, so you can at least go and play Portal 2, and then you could brag to him about how good Portal 2 is and make fun of him for not playing good games.
Yeah.
Or at least great
like,
games.
Here's my serious advice. My very serious advice. I'm sitting upright, and I'm sipping my Darjeeling tea, and I'm saying, don't get caught up or upset when people enjoy things in their own way, right? Like the whole Mac PC argument, and even the PC console argument. That's like people get so upset when they see someone else enjoying a game in the wrong way. You know what I mean? Like, why aren't you playing on a keyboard and mouse? Like, how can you play it that way? It's like, well, super accuracy isn't important to everyone. Let me just enjoy my game.
And auto-aim,
be united in enjoying games. Don't get caught up in this other crap. But Fable 3 is a pretty bad game, and you should probably at least, I don't know, just give him a mild punch, I want to say. It's like on the shoulder.
Like a light punch.
Just like to tell him, you know, I think your choices in life have been pretty poor up until this point. But I want you to get better, and I want you to play some better games. Chum.
For me.
Yeah.
See, Danny's problem is he's notably leaving out the games he would recommend playing, and I'm worried that some of those, he's like, why aren't you totally playing the new, I don't know, think of a game that would be
Why aren't you really... playing Black Ops?
Right. Play a good game. Play up some Black Ops. Why aren't you playing the new Madden? It's really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't know what Danny's thinking. Danny might be totally off base as well.
He could be totally... I think Danny is someone who is... Cause he has a Mac, right? So I think he might be way into tower defense games and pop cap games.
Why don't you get that new Bejeweled? It's really great. What are you wasting time with these RPGs?
We are getting really good at alienating gamers. I think it's get we there. We could do a podcast about how to do that.
Danny, look, I'm just saying, put down the Facebook games. quit cow clicking, and let your buddy play Fable 3.
We just released an iPad app called The Final Hours of PC Games. It's like a multimedia experience. We've had unprecedented access over the past few years, and for $2 you can download it from the App Store, and you'll see just sort of the collapse and death of PC games. Yeah. Get it.
It's a exclusive behind the scenes look.
How dead they are. They're so dead.
So that's been another episode of the Joystick Podcast. Before we let our friend Bob Ball do the housekeeping, I want to take a moment, sit down with you around the dinner table. Is that where? Yeah, yeah. Around the dinner table. And just have some real talk. Just some straight talk between us, friends.
This has been, we've been debating on how to sort of approach this topic with you guys for a long time. But I think this seems like an opportune moment.
I think they're old enough for it now.
Yeah, I think they're ready.
Guys, I know we asked last week, and you guys all promised. You told us, yes, Joystick, I will do that for you. And you swore, but a lot of you lied.
You're a liar.
You lied, and that's okay. Look, yeah. People lie. I get it. What we're asking you to do now is do the right thing. Make up for your lie, which you did do.
Your dirty lie that you did.
And vote for Joystick for best games-related website in the Webbies.
We've made it easier than ever, because if you go to joystick.com, there's like this massive ass
button. Guys, you click that. We're not begging, it's going to be like,
we're not trying to be obvious about it.
Hey, you've got to register. You know what? Either you type in some random stuff and you register, you're done. Or just hit the Facebook Connect button. You'll be registered in like one button press. Hit the Twitter Connect button. You'll be registered in like a second. Go vote for Joystick. You can vote for other stuff. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff to vote for. But vote for us. We need your help. We don't ask for a lot, like, except for the $38 an episode subscription fee, which, again, thank you for paying.
Right now, the escapist is winning. Who?
Right.
The escapist.
Guys, Joystick, who? Come on.
Do you guys want husky voice Chris again? I mean, Ariana will kick him in the throat again if you don't vote.
We gotta win.
He's just recovering.
It's not an option. But I've only made 70 or 80 fake identities on Facebook in order to register and vote. I don't know how many more fake identities I can come up with. Various spellings of my name. I'm running out.
Hey, let's make this interesting. If we win, everything continues as normal. If we lose, we stop doing the podcast. Because if we can't get the thousands of people listen to vote for us and sort of mobilize people, then what's the point?
There's so many people listening. We have the download numbers.
There's so many people
listening. We know that there's like a jillion of you guys. All we need to do is get you guys to go to bit.ly/votejoystick. JOYSTIQ, one word. Go there and vote. It's going to take you 3 minutes total to type in the URL, load up the page, register, and then vote for Joystick and submit.
Yep.
Maybe 2 minutes, depending on your internet speeds.
And stop lying. Stop lying to us.
And stop lying, or else we'll cancel the show forever.
We're not angry.
Time
guys,
to mobilize.
We're not angry. Disappointed.
But the bills come due.
Pay up.
Give us your votes and get your friends to vote, or else we'll cancel the show.
Do you have any siblings? Just go vote on their accounts, too.
Tell them to vote with all their accounts. Come on. Come on, the escapist?
Your mom would probably love us.
Guys, we're listening to Gamefly. They rent games.
They rent games. No one even likes them.
So they get some games from them. Big deal. We give away games for free all the time that we could keep, but we don't. Give
better.
Them to you.
Better than Bitly.
Jeez. Okay. Well, now that we're done reprimanding you, thank you for listening. I'll let Bob Ball take away the housekeeping, and we'll talk to you guys next week. If you're lucky.
Stop lying. Goodbye.
happy to say bye.
Bye.
Just any time.
When will this show ever end? Well, realistically speaking, now. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, and I'll make a dollar. Shoot us an email at podcast@joystick.com. Hey, would you like to leave us a voicemail that we may or may not play on the show? Well, hit us up with those digits. 877-JOYSTIQ. You can join our hosts on the Twitter at Chris Grant, at Ludwig K, and at Justin McElroy. Hey, guess what? All of what was just discussed on the show is actually a website. I know, right? Joystick.com. You can also join other tremendously fabulous video game lovers on the Facebook at the Joystick Podcast Appreciation Group, or JPEG. Hey, there's also an iPhone and an Android app you can go download. Do yourself a favor. Tell a friend to listen to the show, too. I'll also make another dollar. And as you can tell, the end of the show is really about me making $2. Now, move along. We have to hose this place down for the nightly topless burlesque show. Join us next time on the Joystick Podcast when... Cave Johnson. We're done here.